Welcome to the Before Midnight podcast, coming to you from the N+1 studios overlooking beautiful downtown Frankfurt. In this podcast, we explore the world of endurance multisport. If it has to do with swimming, biking, running, or any combination of the three, we are there. This week, we're talking about the Olympic trials that just happened this past weekend, and we're going to talk a little bit into the subject of bike helmets. Bike season is about upon us, and it's time to start thinking about things. I'm your host, Linda Ward, along with my co-host, Brian Schenkenfelder. How are you doing today, Brian?
Look, we know how you feel. We didn't believe it either when we were you, and we us said what we us are saying right now.
Okay, wait. If you guys are really us, what number are we thinking of?
69, dudes!
Welcome to episode 69 of the Before
Midnight
Podcast.
I knew he was going to do that. I'm so sorry, everyone. My co-host is a 12-year-old boy.
I am phenomenal, and I am jacked up and ready to go.
You can crack me up.
So how are you doing this weekend? Did you have a good time? We had some warmer weather.
Warmer weather. Well,
one day was warm.
Yeah.
Sunday.
It was kind of a crazy week. We had, last week it was just so up and down. The plague hit the school again. Hit your son pretty hard.
Yeah, he actually went down for a day or two.
Yeah, his teacher went down for like 3 days.
Yeah, it was a pretty nasty little thing. Because yeah. it was one of those ones where your fever would come and go, which is kind of annoying.
Yeah. Think you're better. No, sorry, bad luck.
Yeah.
Put you back down again. Yeah. So that meant that I had to get a lot of substitutes, which meant, hey, that was me. Because the substitute started getting sick. I was like, oh, man, yeah, that's right. You all don't have an immunity. They come in for a day, and it's like, oops, can't get them again for another week.
It must have been a fairly easy-to-transmit disease because it hit everybody. I ended up not getting it because I went into quarantine in my own household.
Yeah, your wife said that she didn't see you for at least 3 days. It's like, I don't know where he's been in this house, but we haven't seen him. I know he's there because food's gone, but.
Yeah, no, I found myself up in the my son's room. He has a desk up there, so I turned that into my office.
Probably pretty smart.
I somehow avoided it. I don't know what the incubation time on that is. I may still get nailed by it, but for now
I think you're pretty
potentially
clear.
Be in the clear.
Yeah. I mean, I looked and there's a few kids that are still out, but it made for a long week for me because it's like, oh, all right, well, that means I'm working some extra hours. Not a big deal. And then Saturday was leap day, and for some reason, my friends decided, hey, let's still run at 7 o'clock in the morning when it's 17 degrees, even though it was going to be 40 later on. But later on, I was the lead cycle for a leap day race, which they did a 4-miler and a 2.29-miler at 2:29 in the afternoon. So that was kind of cool.
That's unique.
Yeah.
That makes for a nice themed race.
Lots of frogs everywhere. And it was in a park, and I rode the road bike instead of the mountain bike because I really didn't feel like putting the rack on the back of the car and everything, because the mountain bike won't fit in my little car. The road bike will. I just got to pop off the wheel, taking off the front wheel, and the mountain bike's a pain in the rear. So I opted for the road bike, and it was in a park with like all kinds of switchback turns. And I was like, uh-oh. I mean, it was like a walking path that was paved. And so I was like, well, I better be pretty far ahead of him so that I can slow down enough, you know, and not have the lead runner catch me. And yeah, that was probably a smart idea because this dude was fast. He finished in 23 minutes and some change, not breathing hard and not even, I don't think even broke a sweat. We had a full-on conversation at the end of the race. I was like, okay, dude.
Well, it wasn't that far of a race, I guess.
No.
And it was cold, so you're not going to have a lot of sweat.
Yeah. I mean, the sun was shining. It was a good day for a race. It was really a nice, it was perfect conditions for running. And,
cold for me.
Yeah, well, whatever. It's not like you had to bike and swim first. It was just a flat-out running race.
Still cold.
It was very cold on the bike. That was for sure. But it was a lot of fun, so that was cool. And then yesterday I got some Oh, well, the funniest thing about the race, too, the third place dude, the second place dude came in about like a minute later. Third place came in a couple minutes later. And he like collapsed at the finish line. I'm like, is he puking? Compared to the first place guy who's not even breathing hard. And the third place guy's like, kind of a little overly dramatic, I felt. But
he pushed himself to his edge, his limit.
Yeah. Yep. With headphones on. Like, big old headphones. That was kind of funny. I was like, you know, if you took off some of the layers of clothing and maybe the headphones, you wouldn't have had to put in so much effort. I don't know. It was different.
People do different things. I usually, at the end of races, I like to sit down for a few minutes. Everybody comes over to you and like, you okay? I'm like, yeah, I'm just chilling out here. Give me a minute to regroup a little bit and then I'll be fine. It's like one race, we end up having a sprint at the end and I got to the finish and I was just bent over, breathing, and they came over like, stand up, walk around. I'm like, dude, just give me a minute. I'm fine. Just give me a second. It turns out I was reading here recently that that's actually a better position to recover than standing straight up because you can open up your diaphragm better.
If you're leaning over?
Yeah. You can actually open up your lungs better than if you're standing straight up.
Huh. That doesn't sound right to me. I'll have to read up on that.
It's just the position allows you to open up your full capacity of your lungs to take in more oxygen than standing straight up does with like your hands on your head.
I guess like a position like child's pose or something if you're on the ground, which is what this guy was basically doing.
Yeah, no, this is like if you're just kind of leaned over, like on your knee, you know, hands on your knees, and just that's actually an easier position to breathe than standing straight up.
Yeah, okay.
To take in more oxygen.
That makes sense.
Which is interesting because everybody tells you always to stand up.
Stand up and walk around, yeah.
And I've never been that way. I like, for me, it's much easier to breathe.
So the people like grabbing your timing chip off your ankle are real happy because you'll stand still. I'm like, I'll be back if you grab that. I'm going to puke on you if you make me stop walking.
Oh, no, at the end of the race, I sit down. Just let me sit here for a few minutes and then I'll get up and move on.
I need to get away from people, I guess, when I, you know, if I put in a super hard effort, I don't want to be right there. I need to move away from people.
Well, I make sure I get well enough beyond the finish line before I sit down. But then I usually find like one of the sides and sit down and watch like the next five people finish before I get up and move on.
Best race finish setup I ever saw was Monumental Marathon. I did the half and then I went back and was watching friends finish the full. And they had National Guard there that was catching people at the end. And it was great. I mean, because there were people that were putting every ounce of effort in, and they were catching them and getting puked on, getting a motorcycle and getting him out of the way. It was a huge race. So I finished Boston. There wasn't too many people. Well, they were like trying to chase you down and give you a medal. And I'm like, get out of the way. I'll get it later.
Yeah, they do like to give you the medals and take your timing chip like immediately, which I get. I don't have a problem with that.
Anyway, had a really good bike ride yesterday. You ended up riding too, didn't you?
Yeah, I went off by myself. I went over to Lover's Leap.
Oh, okay.
And back. I almost got killed on Old Harrodsburg Road.
Uh-oh.
I think it was maybe a state truck. He came flying through. It's that long, straight, flat stretch over by the Capitol, Old Harrodsburg Road.
Over by the Capitol?
Yeah, I was going over towards...
So you went down River Road?
Yeah, it's okay. Called Old Harrodsburg Road, I think.
Oh, is it really?
Technical name for it, yes.
Oh, whoops. I just always call it River Road.
River Road, yeah.
The river's right next to it. Nobody lives on it.
River right. Road. I'm going down that, and I hear the truck coming up behind me, and then I see cars coming the other way. And that's when I'm like, okay, he's going to get close. And I almost, like, punched out to the side just to hit his car, because I knew he was going to be really close, because there was cars coming the other way at the same time.
Yeah.
Fortunately, I didn't do that, because he was one of those trucks that had, like, the wide stick-out mirrors.
Uh-oh.
Not like just a normal truck.
Right.
And I imagine that mirror missed me by about 4 or 5 inches.
Whoa.
It was close.
Oh.
And it was right at shoulder level, too, because it's those big mirrors. And, oh, I was hot. That's the first time I've been really hot in a while.
There's plenty of, I mean, you can see ahead of you on that road for the most part.
Yeah, he saw the cars and he gunned it.
He saw the cars and he still did it.
He gunned it.
Wow.
He was trying to beat the other cars at me.
What a jack, whatever.
Yeah, it was it was very interesting.
Huh.
That's the closest I've been to getting hit in a very, very long time. I've had cars go by me close.
Yeah.
And I'm usually always like, whatever, dude, you know, pass far. But this was a guy who almost hit me. I mean, it was...
And had no reason to.
And there was he waits two, three seconds, he moves on.
Yeah, yeah. Huh.
I almost, like, chased him down and just banged on his car. Because we were getting closer to that red light. I don't think I would have caught him, though, before he turned right.
Yeah.
And just bang on the door. I was like, you know, you couldn't wait 3 seconds, Jackknife?
Yeah. Yeah.
Because that would have been a bad one, too. Because he would have probably broken my shoulder, my arm. That type of hit. I'm not sure if I would have ended up under his car or if I would have gone off to the side. That would have been ugly.
Was it a dually truck? Like, did it have double wheels in the back?
I don't remember. Mm-hmm. I don't think so.
Okay.
It's just frustrating. It's like, because I'm usually the most pro, like, car.
Yeah, they're always going to win. It's
I'm always very pro car.
You're pretty realistic about it.
I understand that cyclists are in their way. I get that. I get the annoyance of it. And I generally try to get out of their way and help them pass as soon as possible because of that. I get I'm an annoyance. I'm slower than you.
Yeah. But
don't buzz me at 3-4 inches.
Yeah.
Because I felt the wind on my shoulder as that mirror went by.
Yeah.
It was really, really close.
Yeah.
And like I said, I knew he was coming. I heard him gun it. I got kind of narrow and on the side because I ended up moving over to the side, which was probably smart, too. He may have hit me if I'd stayed where I normally was. And it's like anything else. You just have to pay attention when you're out there on the roads. It's sad. It was just so like I said, the cars, he could see them as a straight road, and he just decided to gun it.
Yeah.
Rather than wait 4 or 5 seconds for the other car to pass.
Let's play chicken with cars and with, you know.
Well, he wasn't playing chicken. He was just gunning it. He didn't bother to get out of the lane. He was not across the center line.
Wow.
Because the other car was probably right there.
Yeah.
When I look back, I mean, the car was there. He couldn't have gotten the other side of the lane. So we shared a lane. That's how close he was to me.
Yeah.
In a wide truck.
It's not that wide there. And in a wide truck. Wow. I am so sorry. That's awful.
This is one of the reasons I don't like straight roads and roads that are fairly busy because people are stupid.
Yeah. If it's windy, they're paying attention and they will generally.
Well, they have to because they can't afford to go around you with potential cars coming the other way.
Yeah. Now, granted, we had a couple people do that yesterday, and it's like, ooh, you probably should have waited till you got to the crest of that hill. That was a little risky, but.
It's always risky. But I've never had. I generally don't have problems on the rural roads. It's only when you get in towns and you get on straight roads. That people do stupid stuff. It's crazy.
Yeah, the only time I've ever gotten buzzed real close was on a back straight road. It was Old Lawrenceburg. And it was like, there was no cars even coming towards me, but he stayed super close and did like 55. And it's like, really? Was that necessary? You couldn't have given me the 3 feet?
Well, I mean, I have people go by. I don't, you know, if you pass me at a foot or two, it's annoying, but that doesn't bother me.
Yeah.
When I almost get hit, that's a different thing altogether. Because a foot, you buzzed me, you gave me enough room, you weren't going to hit me. This guy was very lucky he didn't hit me, to be honest.
He was just giving inches. Wow.
Crazy.
Because,
I mean, especially in a truck like that, you don't really know how wide your mirrors are. He may have thought he was giving me more room than he did, but it was close.
If he wasn't going over the double yellow line and feeling the that's on that road, he was too close.
Yeah. No, I mean, he was too close. But again, it was a big truck. It's probably not his primary truck. I think it might have been a state truck. So, it probably isn't his primary mode of transportation. He may not have thought he was as close as he was. I'll give him the benefit of the doubt in hindsight. But yeah, that's dangerous.
No, that's way too dangerous.
You know, because the sad thing is, it's not like there was like 500 cars coming the other way. If he'd waited like 2 seconds, he could have gone on.
Yeah, you got to decelerate for a minute, dude.
Other than that, it was a great ride.
We had dog encounters. That was our issue yesterday. I impressed the heck out of Kelly because it's like, it was two Australian Shepherds came out. And Kelly knew that they were there. She was like, I think there's a couple dogs up here. And I saw them and I knew they were going to chase. So I just slowed down and they stopped and they were like, oh, well, this isn't any fun. She was kind of amazed. I was like, yeah, those guys almost can outrun. So I figured if I stop, you know, they're herding dogs. They just want to chase.
Oh, usually if they get real close, I'll unclip one leg, get ready to kick them.
They didn't get that close. They were still up on the hill, and it was like they wanted to chase. So because I stopped, not stopped, but I slowed down so much, it wasn't anymore. You know, it wasn't fun anymore. And they were like, yeah, well, never mind.
It's when they get out in the roads when I get nervous.
Yeah.
If you want to run alongside me, that's fine. You can do that all day. You come out the road, you're a danger to me.
Yeah. We had a few that came out in the road. We had a couple. One, I saw a Weimaraner in the road, and I was like, okay, loose dog. And I was like, oh, that one's not going to come out. I didn't see the pit bull thing that all of a sudden came flying out and went between Kelly and myself. Luckily, she was all right. I was afraid that she would get, you know, they would get in front of her chasing me. But
the silent dogs are the ones you got to worry about, because they actually will come out and they'll snap at you.
Yeah. Yeah, this guy was—he was just chasing too. No, nobody snapped at us, but boy, there were a lot of dogs out.
So. Well, it was warm, so people put their dogs out.
Yeah, and they were—you know—people were outside with their dogs, just not even thinking about it. So, did you guys have volleyball Saturday?
Yeah, we played another game. We lost. It was a nail biter. The second game came down to the end, and my little tiny girl who couldn't serve—she's starting to figure it out.
Ah.
So the first time around she served, she got all five in, and they didn't return them. We get to the final game, we're down, it was 20 to 19.
You don't actually officially keep score, do you?
Yeah, they keep score, which annoys the heck out of me.
Okay.
Because the other team's coaches, they hide all their weak players, and they play to win, and it just drives me absolutely bonkers.
Yeah.
We were down big in this game. We were down like 15 to 3 in this game, and we came back. So she was up to serve. We were down 20 to like 18 when she started.
Oh, wow.
So if she missed a serve, we lost. Oh. So she hits three serves. It's 20 to 20. Wait, no, she hit two. We must have been down like 19 to 20. So she hit the first two serves. I don't know, two or three serves. Yeah, we were on her. And then their third serve gave us the lead 21 to 20. So she came up to her fourth serve. She hits it, we win. And she missed it. Then it became 21-21. The other team got to serve, and they, of course, got 2 points and won the game.
Poor kid. Did she realize?
No, they didn't realize it, which is fine.
Good. Good. Yeah. Especially if she's doing so much better.
Yeah, it was. That was like, oh, one more serve, and she could have been the hero of the game. Because we won the first game, I think, in pretty much a similar fashion. We came back from an early deficit and hit a bunch of serves. I'm beginning to realize that my strategy for these things might be to put all my best players in like the middle of my lineup and put my weak servers first. Go ahead and take the L in the first 10 or 15 points, and then have like four or five good servers back to back and just really take it to the other team, because they begin to get out of place. So once you get past those first four or five, their best players are not in that great position to receive.
Right.
And so you can make runs.
They rotate it out, kind of thing.
Because I found that like my first three or four servers, even if they can get it over, the other team usually will return one or two of them. But once I get into that fifth or sixth server position, that's when the big runs happen, somewhere in the middle. So I may just start playing to that.
There you go.
And trying to win while still rotating everybody in.
Yeah. Try to win in the middle of the game instead of the beginning.
Hey, yeah, because the other team, we were missing a couple, but the other team had one or two kids who couldn't get it over, and they amazingly only served once in all three games.
What do you know?
It's amazing how that happens. We had everybody serve twice, except for two of them, but that was a rotational mistake. My son and another girl, because we only had eight, so I had two sit out, and they went through the rotation, and because they were behind a number of number of serves they were out there, I put them kind of in the middle of rotation in that last game. They never got up to serve because the game went so quick. It wasn't because I was trying to hide them. It just so happened. Because I had a couple people that served three times because of how I set up the rotation the third game. Because I wanted them to get to play most of that game.
Yeah.
So I kind of put them on the back end of the rotation all the way through. Because I knew it would be a fairly short game, but I thought they might get a chance to serve.
Yeah.
I think they came up one short, because we only had like three people serve. It was a very, very quick third
very
game.
Very fast game.
That's the way it goes sometimes.
How many more weeks you got of volleyball?
Three, maybe? Three or four? Okay. Three more. And then soccer starts the week after.
Oh, wow.
My son's excited about soccer. He's done with volleyball.
Yeah. He's been practicing. He was one of the last big kids at school last week. And I was like, well, you want me to text your mom, see if she can come get you, you know, a little earlier? And he's like, no, I want to play soccer. You know, so
he's getting fired up, and I think a bunch of them are ready for soccer season. Yeah.
I was a lousy goalie. I was trying to play with him. I'm like, I don't know how to do this. He got every shot past me. Yeah. He thinks I'm pretty pitiful. And he'd be accurate.
It was good to get away. We played soccer for an extended period of time, and I think he'd kind of burned out towards the end of the season last year.
Yeah.
Because we played pretty much spring, summer, and fall. But now that he's been away and playing another sport, and he's starting to watch more videos of soccer, he's starting to get more into the sport. I guess he's becoming of age, and he's beginning to get aware of the players, and he knows the teams, and that helps invigorate some enthusiasm for the sport.
Yeah.
And him and his friend seem pretty excited for soccer season to start.
Yeah. Well, they'll be on the same team this year.
Because I think his friends are playing basketball, and I think they're getting drilled. So I don't know how much fun they're having in basketball.
Well, his friend's a little on the vertically challenged side, too.
And they're all eight-year-olds playing in an 8-9 league in basketball.
So he's tiny.
Yeah, and he's small, and some of his other friends, I mean, they're decent size, but some of those 9-year-olds start to get bigger.
Yeah.
And it'll be interesting to see how that plays in soccer. Fortunately, soccer's a sport where height isn't as big of a deal.
Mm-hmm.
And speed matters more.
Yep.
But they'll have some kids with some more mass in them, which will be interesting, but we'll see how that plays out. I'm pretty excited for soccer season. I enjoy that more than volleyball. My wife's the volleyball lover in our family.
Yeah.
I enjoy playing. It's somewhat fun to coach. I did figure out that it's a lot like baseball, and that it's a high failure sport, and it's a one-on-one sport with a lot of failure.
Mm-hmm.
And that's okay. It doesn't have as much failure as baseball. Baseball is like the ultimate failure sport. I mean, seriously, I mean, a great hitter hits it one out of every three times at plate.
Yeah.
That's a high fail sport.
Yeah. Yeah.
And from a pitching standpoint, there's a lot of failure in pitching as well. And it's a very baseball's a very one-on-one sport, and volleyball is the same way. The hitter hits, and you have one person who has to defend it and try to get it up.
Yeah.
And the serve works the same way. It's a one-on-one type sport, which a lot of other sports aren't that way. Football, basketball, hockey, they're more team sports. It's not one-on-one type events like baseball and volleyball is.
Yeah.
So that was kind of an interesting concept I had over the weekend.
Well, we want to take a moment to thank our sponsor for this month, the Kentucky History Half Marathon 10K and 5K that'll be held here in Frankfort on October 17th, 2020. Kentucky History Half is a unique race that highlights some of the history surrounding our little capital city. Runners go past the old and new Capitol buildings, Stanley Boone's resting place at the Frankfort Cemetery on top of the best view in Frankfort, besides the N+1 studios. It's worth the run up the hill. I did it yesterday morning, and I really don't like to run up there because it's hard, but oh my gosh, that view is beautiful.
It is probably the best view in Frankfort.
Yeah, and it's where dead people are, so, but you can still go.
So it's very quiet.
Very, very peaceful. Very quiet. Daniel Boone's up there in the Frankfort Cemetery, and then you get to go by Buffalo Trace Distillery, smell all the mash, depending on the weather that day of the race.
Mash. Smells good.
They've got bourbon balls in there, too, I think. You get to run by Rebecca Ruth, which is nice, and they have the bourbon ball candy.
Well, now they have tasting. You can go get tasting it.
Yeah. You could take a detour off the race course, going down Capitol Ave, take a ride on 2nd Street, go get a bourbon ball, come back.
No, I'm talking about getting like actual bourbon. Tasting.
Brian's going to take a tour in the middle of the race. Anyway, it's a great time. This will be the 6th year for the race, and it should be a lot of fun. To register for this one-of-a-kind race, go to runsignup.com and look for the Kentucky History Half Marathon. All right, so today we're going to talk about the Olympic trials.
And yeah, we'll talk a few minutes about the Olympic trials, at least give an update on what happened. We'll start with the women's side. It was probably the least interesting of the two as far as how close it was. They had Alafini. I have no idea how to pronounce these names. I'm not even going to try. One with a time of 2 hours, 27 minutes, and 23 seconds. Second place was Molly Siddell. Cito? I don't know how to pronounce it. Is she the one? I think she's the one that was her first marathon.
I think so. Yeah. Yeah.
Welcome to the marathon world as you punch your ticket to Tokyo.
Yeah. Hopefully. Golly.
227.31, so she was 8 seconds back. And then Sally, not going to pronounce this either. 228.52. I know crowd favorite Des Linden got shameful fourth. Missed out by 11 seconds.
Oh, my God. I met Des Linden 2 years ago. She is a huge bourbon fan after she won, 2018 Boston. Was it 2018? Yeah. She was the first American. And so they had interviewing her, and she loved bourbon. So the race director for Run the Bluegrass in Lexington, Kentucky, invited her to come down and pick the bourbon for the race. And since I'm in charge of the pacers, I got to meet her. She's like the tiniest little person ever. She's like all of 95 pounds.
She's a marathoner. That's pretty much a definition of a
pretty
marathoner.
Pretty much, yeah. Her husband brews coffee and was actually at, I got to hang out with him tons at the expo. She didn't come back, but he was there selling his coffee and stuff. Super nice people. So I was very disappointed that Des didn't make it. But maybe one of those, well, I don't wish anything bad, but one of those top three knocks out.
She'll probably get to go as an alternate.
Yeah. She would.
That's even better. You get to travel and not have to do anything. Just party in the Olympic Village for 2 weeks.
You got to kind of be
you have to be
ready. So you can't have too much fun. But
the men's side, Galen Rupp. Is it Galen Rupp? I think it's Galen Rupp, isn't it? Or Galen.
I think it's Galen. I'm not sure.
He won with a 209.20. Rather easily won by about 42 seconds over Jacob Riley. The interesting battle, the men's battle was much more interesting in that you had second, third, and fourth place were separated by 4 seconds.
Oh, wow. That is tight.
Yeah, so second place was 210.02, third place was 210.03, and fourth place was 210.06, so 3 seconds.
Wow.
3 seconds is pretty close, I would think. I started doing the calculations on this. It's something like a marathon is something like 41,000 yards, and then I divided their time. They cover about 3 yards a second.
Mm-hmm.
So when you're looking at a 3 second deficit, you're looking at about 9 yards, 10 yards, 30 feet. That is pretty
not
close.
Very far. Reach out and.
30 feet from making the Olympics, yeah.
Oh.
Because Des Linden was 11 seconds back. That's 33 yards. That's you're looking at 60 feet. That's a pretty good distance. You may have seen them, and that's about it. They were pretty far out there. Well, it's kind of crazy when you think about it, because like I had the times from like first to 10th place, and it looks like it's about 3 minutes separate first from 10th place among the men and women. Women a little bit about 3:20, but the men were right at 3 minutes separate first and 10th place. So finishing the top 10, you had to be within 3 minutes of the winner.
I need to look in, and I'll have it for next week, why Molly Huddle DNF'd. They're Sarah Hall, Emily Sison, they've got those listed as DNFs. They were all favorites.
Yeah.
So I'm not sure what happened there. I didn't get a chance to watch it because I was on a bike. But
so, and like I said, I did some of the calculations. It's kind of interesting when you start looking at it as 3 yards per second. So every 33 seconds is basically a football field difference. 36 for a soccer pitch, because a soccer pitch is a little bit longer. And then if you look at it, it's about 0.1 miles every 60 seconds. So about 0.3 miles separated first and 10th place, which is actually a pretty good distance.
That's a pretty good distance, yeah. So
between first and 10th place among the men and women.
It's still over 26.2 miles. Wow, they stayed that close.
Yeah. Well, I mean, these are all elites.
Yeah, yeah.
You would expect them to run pretty close to each other. And the way these things generally work is a lot of times they'll pack for a long time and then they try to separate later in the race, which is some of the reason they are always semi-close in a race like this.
Yeah. We had a local guy, well, not from Frankfurt, but from Lexington, Zach Bevan, made it to the trials, and he finished right in the middle of the pack. He was 98th out of 177. I think he finished with a 224. I think that's right. I apologize if I have his times incorrect, but yeah.
So he
right
beat
the
first female. Interesting. The first female was 227. That would probably be about right.
Yeah.
If so he finished about 210, so 14 minutes behind the winner, which would be at 60 seconds, about 1.4 miles back. When you start looking at it, that's a pretty far way back. You're over a mile back of the winner.
But, you know, I mean, at the same time, you know, it's impressive that he...
Oh, no, it's always neat to go there, but you start looking at that as 1.4 miles back. That's a long way back.
Yeah, that's a long way back. Yeah, yeah.
Yeah, this is why your long races like marathons and your long-distance triathlons are not very interesting because it spreads out. It's too long of a race for it to be close, yeah. Like a 200-meter dat race or even a 5K. That's okay.
It's fun. I mean, when friends run marathons and there's tracking apps, it does get exciting, you know, to like see where they are and stuff. But that's because, you know, I'm looking at people that are all over the place usually. And I don't know. I like tracking people on long races.
I'm just saying from a spectator standpoint, it's not always great viewing.
Yeah. Well, yeah.
Because the races just generally aren't that close.
Yeah.
I mean, even when you're talking about 10 yards separating third and fourth, I mean, that's still not going to be very dramatic of a finish because that's still 10 yards. The guy pulled away with probably 20, 30 yards to go in the race. And the other guy, I'm sure the fourth place guy just stopped or slowed down probably. It may have been closer than that. But I think like Des Linden, she was trying to track him down. So she was closing, but still just way too far to make that even interesting. The guy's one was probably very interesting. Because that 3 seconds was probably exacerbated a little bit because the fourth place guy probably slowed down once he lost the third place. Then the sprint. Because you probably, I'm assuming in that situation, you know if you have the kick at the end.
Yeah.
Pretty quickly.
Yeah, I'm looking up Zach right now. He, 224.52. He averaged a 5.32 pace.
That's fast.
Yep. He's a Brooks runner, too.
That's why he didn't do better. Should have been more than the Vaporflies. Because I think everybody in the race who's in the top 10 were Vaporfly guys. Just about. Most of the top athletes on both sides were Vaporfly wearers. I think there's a
handful. It says, it on the results, it kind of, it says who their, I guess who their sponsor is. Yeah, Galen Rupp was Nike. Jacob Riley was second. He's Boulder Track Club, so I don't know what shoes he was wearing. Third was Nike. Fourth place, U.S. Army. Fifth place was also U.S. Army. Interesting. Average pace for the winner was 4:56. Dang.
I can't even do a mile at that pace. That's hilarious. Genetics matters, folks. Genetics matter.
Yeah. Yeah. Yeah, you're right. The winner for the women's... Well, now the winner for the women's, Hoka won.
Oh.
Second place, Saucony. Third place was Nike. Interesting.
They've been so faster than
maybe
the women's
Vaporfly. Maybe it's not in the shoes.
Oh, the shoes matter. I guarantee the shoes matter. They wouldn't all be wearing them if it didn't matter.
I'm on the email list for Brooks when Brooks' version of the Nike Vaporfly comes out.
A couple companies have versions that are similar, and none of them have been anywhere near as close as the Vaporfly.
Yeah.
It's been interesting. No one's been able to touch the Vaporfly's speed. Yep. I don't know if the other companies have enough money to invest like Nike does. That Adidas is probably the only one who can match Nike in research dollars.
Yeah, probably, because they do other stuff, so much other things.
I mean, that's a big chunk of it. It's got to have the money. And Nike's been doing this for a while. Nike has been looking into fast running shoes for a while now. Other companies have not been doing that.
Mm-hmm.
The 2 hour, breaking the 2 hour has been a Nike goal for a while now. They've been developing shoes specifically to break that for a while.
Yeah.
So it doesn't surprise me that no one's been able to touch them as far as speed goes. Even with their knockoffs, which is basically what they're all doing. It's funny.
Yeah, maybe somebody will come up with something better, but we'll find out.
Seems unlikely.
Does at this point, yeah. Yep.
I mean, they'll slowly catch them. It's just not going to be this year or next year. It'll probably be like 5 or 6 years from now. It's going to take a while.
Yeah.
The other topic I want to talk about today was helmets.
Mm-hmm.
I've had a couple questions from some different people recently about helmets. So I wanted to kind of take a few minutes here and kind of describe what are the different helmets out there and what is the difference between the $10, $20 Walmart helmet and the $300 or $400 helmet you can see online in some places. Now, I don't know if there's that many that are $300 or $400, but there are $200, $250. $300 range.
Oh, there's three and four. I was.
Yeah, you can
this
find
is something
some really
I was shopping
ones.
For last year and did quite a bit of looking around as to what was going to work best for me.
And so I just wanted to kind of lay out what the different helmets were, why they're priced the way they are, just kind of giving people an idea of what to look for in helmets. The helmets you find at Walmart are the cheap helmets, the $10, $20 helmets. They are functional. If you wreck, it will save your head.
Yep.
And they are generally cool designs meant to appeal to kids. Have weird things like mohawks and cool designs on them. What they lack in is weight. They tend to be fairly heavy. They tend to be overbuilt. And they tend to not have very good ventilation. Things that are not, which are fine for, I'm going to go out and ride 30 minutes around my neighborhood. You know, yeah. The kid's going to go down the street on his bike to his friend's house.
Yeah.
That's what these helmets are designed for.
Well, and if it's for a kid, it's got to appeal to the kid so that they'll wear it. And
right.
And argue with you all the time. If it has a mohawk on it or whatever princess on it, they're going to wear it.
Right. But even like the cheap, normal design ones they have there are heavy. They don't ventilate very well and are really just not meant to ride more than 20 or 30 minutes comfortably. Yeah. Once you start getting into endurance sports like triathlon or cycling or whatever, where you're going to be out on the road for multiple hours, weight begins to matter. The helmet on your head gets heavy. It becomes uncomfortable if it gets hot. There are a lot of things that you don't notice until you're on a bike for an extended period of time. And there are some things you don't notice until you actually wear a nicer helmet.
Yeah.
Some of these things don't become apparent until you wear a nicer helmet. You're like, oh, I'm fine. And then you ride with it for a long time, and then you get a nice helmet, and all of a sudden, you're like, oh, okay, I get it now.
Now I understand.
No, I was the same way with electric shifting. Electric shifting came out, and I'm like, I don't understand this. That seems like a really expensive toy that doesn't give you anything. And then you ride with it, and you're like, oh, no, I get it now.
Bing, bing, bing. Now I understand.
Yeah, there's a lot of advantages to electric shifting, the perfect shifting, and it's just much easier on the hands than having to shift over. It really becomes noticeable when I get on a bike that I actually has a mechanical gear set, how much harder mechanical gear sets are than electric gear sets. And helmets are the same way. It's about weight. It's about ventilation. Let's go through some of the different helmet options that are out there also to be more thorough with what. I want to start with kind of the off-road helmets because people might take up mountain biking or whatever. I just kind of want to explain the difference between like an off-road helmet and a road helmet. Your off-road helmets usually come in two forms. You have your mountain bike helmet. The mountain bike helmets generally have a longer back that go down the neck further.
Mm-hmm.
They also generally tend to have a visor. The reason they go down your neck is crashing in mountain biking is a little more frequent than on a road. And a mountain bike crash, you're more likely to kind of tumble out and maybe hit something, strike like a tree or something like that. So they provide more coverage for the back of your head if you're in that situation. The visors are for mainly like low-hanging sticks. When you're riding a mountain bike, you can't like take your hand off the handle and like knock away a branch. That can be very dangerous. Mountain biking over unstable terrain, one-handed is not advised. The visors are there so you can kind of duck your head down and the branch can swipe at the helmet instead of hitting you in the face, which would be just as bad as taking a hand off.
It's interesting because after I started out with horseback riding and helmets, riding helmets are the same way. Like racetrack people, they have a cover on their helmet. The visor on that is just fabric. It's like, doesn't do anything. But if you're riding on a trail, you've got a hard visor. I don't know how many times I would have sticks and stuff like that hitting the top of my head, and thank goodness I had the visor. Same thing. I don't want to let go of the horse to get rid of the branch.
So, yeah. And that's why the mountain bikes have the visors.
Yeah.
So usually when see the helmets with visors, those are on more expensive helmets, those are mountain bike helmets. Yeah. Sometimes the visors are just on cheap helmets just because they potentially serve all kinds of functions.
Right, they're more of a multi-purpose helmet.
Yeah, not necessarily a mountain bike helmet.
Yeah.
The other type of off-road helmet you'll find are the full-faced helmets that you'll see like BMX racers wear.
Mm-hmm.
They're also used by mountain bike downhillers, the guys who go downhill and jump and do all kinds of crazy things. Those are... They look like race helmets on an indie guy in a car.
Yeah.
They're the full face helmets with shields and everything else. Because when they crash, their crashes tend to be very spectacular and can do a lot of damage. They're in the air, they come down. You want to protect your helmet, your head a little bit more.
Because they go around the front, they're protecting the jaw.
Yes, they protect everything. Because, they're in the air and they're coming down hard. And it is a more protective environment that you need that. You can't just go by with a basic helmet. Now, road helmets, on the other hand, their primary concern is over weight and ventilation. They want to take as much of the styrofoam that they use out of the helmet to reduce the weight. They also design them so that when air flows over them, it goes down into your scalp rather than just flowing over and not providing any relief from heat. Most of your helmets are very good at keeping you cooler when you ride in the summer.
Mm-hmm.
Now, the downside to that is in the winter.
You're really cold.
It can get really cold. But in the summer, it provides that ventilation. It provides that weight relief that you would need in longer rides when you're out there for a long time in 80, 90 degree weather. Biking is mostly done in the middle of the day, much more so than running, which is done generally in the mornings and evening hours mm-hmm. by most people. So it's good to have that type of ventilation to try to keep you cool for multiple hours that you're out in the sun and exerting yourself. And to take out material, to create the testing environments necessary to test ventilation levels, what is that? That costs money.
it
takes a lot of engineering.
Yeah.
They also don't sell as many of these. Those two factors are generally what drive the price up into that $100, $200 range for a really nice road helmet.
Mm-hmm.
It's a supply and demand. There's not as, like I said, not as many people are buying it, so they don't make as much, and their cost to make them, to design them, is a lot more. And that's why they're expensive. Again, it's people out there like, don't believe me when I say there's a big difference between a $120 helmet and a $20 helmet. You have to almost kind of trust me and ride in it, and you begin to feel why they're different.
Yeah.
Now, there's another category under road that you'll find, which is your aero helmets. There is two types of aerodynamic helmets. There's the road aerodynamic helmet, and there's more of the time trial aero helmet. Your road aero helmets look a lot like your traditional road helmet, and they're stylish, but a lot of times they take away the ventilation.
Yep.
So they tend to be a lot hotter. You're trading ventilation for aerodynamics. They generally are not as light either as a traditional road helmet because they take away the ventilation. They are generally fairly light still because a lot of times they just replace the holing with plastic. So they try to take out as much material as they can and just replace it with plastic. Instead of having that ventilation bring air in, they're just blocking, they're sending the air on around the helmet to smooth the airflow, which is why they're aerodynamically faster. It's all about smoothing airflow. They become fairly creative in how they try to ventilate, and they provide some ventilation. But for the most part, they're meant to smooth flow, and they generally lack in ventilation. So they're not as cool. So they're not, if you're going out and doing 100-mile rides, it's probably not the best of helmets for for that purpose. The time trial helmets are the ones you see that have the nice long tail that stick out of them. That's the one most people think about. Mm-hmm. And that's your traditional. The long tail ones generally are faster because they have more space to smooth the air out. The downside to those types of helmets is if you move around a lot on a bike, you disturb that flow. And if you put your head down for any reason whatsoever, that tail sticks right up in the air and becomes
instant
a block.
Drag.
It becomes instant drag, yes. Now the preferred time trial helmets has moved to the more snub-nosed tail, the truncated tail. Mm-hmm. A lot of them don't even have tails. They just kind of look like a smooth helmet that kind of ends in the back a little bit. That's kind of the preferred, especially in a sport like triathlon, the long course guys. It's mm-hmm. good for them because they're more likely to not hold their position for an extended period of time.
Right.
If you're doing short course, I can hold a pretty steady position for an hour, half hour, whatever it might be. You're talking about a 5 or 6 hour bike, you're probably going to want more the newer style helmets. And a lot of the pros are using the new style helmets as well on the Tour de France, mainly because they don't, a lot of, especially the ones who aren't good TTers, they use them because the reason they're not TTers is they don't stay in place. They tend to move around a lot, which messes with your aerodynamics. They spend a lot of time in a tunnel getting their shape perfected, and they've got to be able, if you can't hold that shape, you're going to lose time.
Yeah.
Which the good T2ers can do. Now, these helmets, your aerodynamic helmets, tend to be the most expensive. And the reason you have is you still got all the engineering costs, but now you've got the aerodynamic on top of that. So they have to do aerodynamic testing, modeling. They have to take it to wind tunnels and test it. They do a lot of things to, a lot of expense in making these type of helmets. And they sell even less of the time trial helmets or the aero helmets as they do the road helmets. So that's why they're generally more expensive. Now the aero road helmets are coming down as more people buy them.
Yeah.
The price is coming down, but you're still looking at north of $200 for an aero helmet.
I bought mine last fall, and that's what I bought. And it's been great this winter because it is a little bit warmer. I probably won't be wearing it a whole lot this summer except to race in. But it is a little bit heavier. I mean, I can tell when I'm out there for a while. But
and like I said, they're coming down in price. There's a couple companies that have them sub $200 now, an aero road helmet. Not the TT helmets. The TT helmets are all still
north of $200. Well, it's just the other reason why I went for the road aero helmet. It fits me better, or it feels snugger. Maybe that's from the horseback riding background. I don't know. I don't like things bouncing around on my head, and I like things that are snug, so this one seems to fit me better. But
I mean, that's a lot of it, is just getting the fit, making sure it's tight, making sure it doesn't move around a lot on your head.
Yeah, but if it's 90 degrees, I'm going for the road helmet. It's got more ventilation for sure.
Yeah, the ventilation, like I said, if you're only riding for 30 minutes to 60 minutes, that ventilation doesn't matter.
Yeah.
It's when you're out there for a while that the ventilation begins to matter.
Yeah.
I mean, if I was only riding for 30 minutes at a time, I'd probably own a cheap Walmart helmet. But since I'm not, the better helmets matter.
Yep, that it. Well, we'd like to thank our sponsor again, Kentucky History Half Marathon. If you're interested in finding a race around Frankfort mid-October, sign up at runsignup.com. Thanks so much for listening. Rate us on iTunes, subscribe, play us on Google Play. It's also available on our website, go3sport.com. Thanks so much and have an awesome day.